So I've also already mentioned that we wanted to reflect on this past year a bit, looking at particularly where we have discerned God's faithfulness in our lives and our life together. We already dwelled on the scripture passages from Lamentations and 2 Timothy, and I want to say a little bit about especially the Lamentations passage now, and then Pastor Chris is going to come up and share some of his reflections, and then I'll come up and close. It's kind of like a sermon sandwich today, and Chris is the meat. So, yet this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. Perhaps one of the most striking things about the Lamentations passage is that the basis of hope is remembered, not encountered in the present. Yet this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. That the author of Lamentations, like this book is written during, you know, the darkest period in Israel's history. And it's a book of lamentation, of questioning, well, like, how in the world, God, could you allow the Babylonians come and destroy our nation? How could you allow the Babylonians to come and destroy our temple? And to exile them. So it's at this darkest period that the author of Lamentations kind of decides, that makes a commitment, yet this I call to mind. Despite all that's going on around me, the world is going, you know, sideways, yet this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. He's reminding himself of when he's experienced the faithfulness of God, even though in the midst he doesn't see it. And I think that as humans, this is something I resonate with, because we need reminders. I need reminders. If I didn't have my calendar on my phone or the reminders on my watch, I just couldn't survive. Like, I have meetings with different people, even Christmas Day. Hey, Siri, set time for 45 minutes to make sure that, you know, I didn't let the turkey, you know, deep fry too long. We constantly need reminders. And as Christ followers, I think we also need reminders as well. That's why we celebrate the Lord's Supper. You know, do this in remembrance of me. For us to tangibly take that the bread and the cup, you know, physically touch them and take them as a reminder of God's love for us. And so the author of Lamentations here is reminding himself of God's faithfulness. Yet this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. And the dramatic content of his memory gets to the very heart of who God is. Right? He says, because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, for his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. That the three qualities that he highlighted of God, his covenant love, his great love, this Hebrew word chesed, which means kind of sticky love. It's the love that God has for his creation, for his covenant people. That it means that is the basis of God's faithfulness, right? That he has this great love, his compassion. You know, that when we think of it, we worship a God who became not just like us, but became human in the second person of the Trinity, in Jesus. And that when Jesus experienced life and death, and suffering, he wept, he had compassion. He understands, you know, he understands our suffering, our ups and our downs. And then it also highlights the faithfulness of God. And these three qualities, covenant love, his compassion, his faithfulness, all of these underlie the truth of the goodness of God. The central and eternal character of God, his compassion and love, outweigh all the effects of his reaction against sin and evil. Like sometimes in church circles, you get the impression that God is mad at us all the time, right? That God is this judge that's here and just, oh, you guys are so bad, you need grace. And we do need grace. But I think the important theological truth that's highlighted in this passage is that God is love. Right? That's what that John says in 1 John 4:8, that God's fundamental disposition towards his people, indeed to all of his creation, is love. God is not anger, doesn't say that. God's anger against evil, you know, which comes from his righteousness and his holiness, is a terrible reality. Right? We can't pretend it doesn't exist, but it is a negative outworking of God's goodness in rejecting all that is contrary to his nature and will. But it is not eternally definitive of God's character. God is love. God is not anger. It doesn't define him. In contrary, God is slow to anger and abounding in love. The imbalance is 1,000 to 1, according to Deuteronomy chapter 7. So I just want us to remember that this morning, even as we look back over the last year, and we have our ups and our downs, we have our successes and our failures, just to recognize that God's posture toward us is one of love, of covenant love, is one of compassion, is one of faithfulness, and it is one of grace. Robin Perry, in his commentary on Lamentations, he says, in his innermost self, God is full of loving kindness and mercy, and that is how he wants to relate to humans. Consequently, affliction is temporary and is followed by mercy. This theology forms the basis for hope in the midst of crisis. Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, for his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. Chris, come up and share a little bit.
Tyler allotted me 5 minutes, and I don't know how much meat 5 minutes is going to be, but maybe like an appetizer cheese or something. Appetizer cheese, yeah. There are plenty of stories in the Old Testament. One of the most significant periods of suffering for the Israelites was their enslavement in Egypt. Pharaoh, fearing the growing population of Israelites, subjected them to harsh labor and oppressive treatment for several centuries. This period of bondage was marked by suffering, cruelty, and the killing of Hebrew male infants. After escaping Egypt, the Israelites wandered in the desert for 40 years because of their disobedience and lack of faith in God's promise. Despite God's miraculous provision of manna and water, they often grumbled, doubted, and sinned, leading to God allowing them to wander until the disbelieving generation died off. The northern kingdom of Israel, made up of 10 tribes, was conquered by the Assyrian Empire in 722-ish BC. The Israelites were exiled and scattered across the Assyrian Empire, which was a major tragedy. Their exile marked the end of the northern kingdom, and many of the 10 tribes were lost to history, never to return to the land. And then a couple generations later, in 586 BC-ish, the Babylonian army under King Nebuchadnezzar destroyed Jerusalem, including the temple, and took many Israelites into exile. This was a devastating event in the history of Israel, as their capital city was destroyed, and the people were taken away from their homeland as captives, which was seen as a judgment from God for their sin. Bad things happened in the Old Testament. Conversely, one of the most foundational events in the Old Testament is the deliverance of the Israelites from slavery in Egypt. God raised up Moses to lead his people out of bondage, performing mighty miracles such as parting the Red Sea to allow Israelites to escape from Pharaoh's pursuing army. This event marked the beginning of Israel as a nation, chosen by God, and established their covenant with him. After the Exodus, God gave the Israelites the Ten Commandments and the law at Mount Sinai. This was a pivotal moment in their history as it established the moral and ceremonial laws that would govern their relationship with God and with each other. The law provided guidance for righteous living and a covenantal relationship between God and his people. When the Israelites were threatened by the giant Philistine warrior Goliath, the young shepherd David, with faith in God, stepped forward to fight. Armed with only a sling and a few stones, David defeated Goliath, bringing great victory to Israel. This moment demonstrated God's power to deliver his people through unlikely individuals, which became a defining victory for Israel and his people. King Solomon, the son of David, oversaw the building of the magnificent temple in Jerusalem, which became the center of worship for Israel. Under Solomon's reign, the kingdom of Israel experienced peace and prosperity, and the nation enjoyed a time of great wealth, wisdom, and spiritual renewal. And after the Babylonian exile, God stirred the hearts of Persian kings to allow the Israelites to return to their land. Under leaders like Zerubbabel, Ezra, and Nehemiah, the people rebuilt Jerusalem, restored the temple, and reestablished worship. This return from exile was seen as a fulfillment of God's promise to restore his people, and it marked a new chapter of hope and renewal for Israel. Along with the bad things that happened in the Old Testament, good things happened too. These events reflect God's faithfulness, power, and provision for his people. This past year in 2024, the conflict between Israel and Hamas, which escalated in October 2023, continued into 2024 with devastating humanitarian impacts, including casualties, displacement, and widespread destruction in Gaza. Severe climate. In 2024, the world continued to experience devastating effects of climate change, extreme weather events, including wildfires, floods, and heat waves. And they've affected various regions, such as parts of Europe, North America, Asia, North America, causing widespread damage to communities, infrastructure, and ecosystems. Economic challenges persisted in 2024, with inflation remaining high in many countries, supply chain disruptions continuing, and concerns about a global recession. There have been ongoing protests and political unrest in multiple countries. Issues such as economic inequality, authoritarianism, and governance failures have sparked demonstrations, leading to violence and significant social tensions. As well as various regions, particularly in developing countries, have continued to face health crises, including the rise of new infectious diseases and the persistent challenges related to COVID-19 variants, which still pose a significant risk in certain areas in the world. And this has strained healthcare systems and hindered global recovery efforts. Bad things happened in 2024. Conversely, in 2024, significant strides were made in space exploration. We have notable advancements in clean energy technologies in 2024, including increased investment in solar and wind power. Several countries have made progress toward achieving carbon-neutral energy goals with innovations in energy storage and grid integration. In 2024, we had significant medical breakthroughs, including advancements in cancer research and personalized medicine, new treatments for diseases like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, as well as the development of new vaccines and therapies have offered hope to many people suffering from chronic illness. And in 2024, many countries made strides toward improving human rights and social justice. Efforts to combat discrimination and hate and promote gender equality have gained momentum, with more public initiatives being implemented across the globe. On a macro level, good things happened in 2024. There will always be bad in the world. There will always be good in the world, and that is our reality on earth, in the here but not yet fully fulfilled kingdom of heaven. On December 15th, we talked about joy and how Advent was the anticipation of the final good. When we talk about Advent, we're really talking about hope. Hope in the present and hope for the future, because Jesus has come and he's promised to return. The thing is, even though all the bad happened in the Old Testament, the people still worshiped God. They remembered the bad and the good and knew God was in it for the long haul. So they too wanted to be in it for the long haul. God was ever present in the Israelites' lives, in their culture, in their cities, and in their stories. Likewise, God was present in our lives in 2024, in the macro and in the micro, in our culture, in our community, in our city. And so what do we do with that reality? How does God want us to live in the bad moments and the good moments, in the bad things that happen to us and the good things that happen to us? And upon reflection of my year, thinking through the good and the bad and dealing with it and living in it, a few things stand out to me where I've seen God at work in my life. This past year was a year wrestling with the spiritual discipline of rest. I read a quote somewhere that said, tired parents raise tired children. And I've tried really hard to not be tired this year. From a physical sense of rest, a spiritual sense of rest, an electronic rest, I've worked really hard to be not tired. So when good and bad happens in the world around me, in my life, in our family's life, I am more able to deal with it. Comer's, I read a lot of John Mark Comer and listened to him a lot this year. His lessons on rest and spiritual practices talk about people who understand spiritual practices face life in a seemingly unbothered way. Despite the good and the bad, they remain steadfast in the knowledge of God's presence in their life, and spiritual disciplines help them through that. Another thing that stood out to me this year that helped me manage and understand the good and the bad in the world was being relationally rich. At a pastor's gathering a month ago or so, they asked us kind of to go around in a circle and share about something that was stood out to us about our year. And I felt our community at Greenfield is relationally rich. There's a constant of love experience through God's people here. And because we have relational riches, or we can have it, that we can weather the good and the bad things that happen throughout the year. I have accidentally told a family I love them as they were walking out the building. I've gone on vacation with people here. I get hugs at the door from some of my favorite greeters, and I'm blessed to be in mentoring relationships with young people. I admire the community we are blessed with at Greenfield, and the community that weathers grief and celebration, the good and the bad, helps me manage the things or understand that God is with us and God's gift of people and the love we can experience from people is good. And the last thing that helped me understand how God is faithful and how we can be aware of his presence in the good and the bad is that there is so much to the journey. We all set resolutions, well, not all of us, but some of us set resolutions, or we have goals for our life or things we want to accomplish. And the majority of the growing and the learning is the journey to get to our goal. It is living in God's story. It's living in the moments is where we grow and where we develop. When I suck at resting, I learn the importance and value of rest, and I grow in my dependence on God to help me rest well. In the journey, I am formed. And we've all been formed this year in some capacity. The journey before the goal, before the destination is what matters. So looking back, 2024, maybe for you was a bad year. Or had bad moments. Maybe it was a good year. Or had good moments. It's important to view your past year, understand the journey you've been on, how God has been present with you, and formed you in some way. Reflecting on how you've been formed and what has formed you can be pivotal in understanding how God is faithful regardless. So here's to another year following God and being formed slowly but surely by him.
Thanks, Chris. We didn't really talk about what we were going to say, so it's interesting to see how he took it and how I'm taking it. But I really appreciated what you said, Chris. For myself, probably a little bit more, well, I don't know if it's more personal, more, I don't, whatever. I'm just going to go. So the other day, one of the things I did over Christmas was finish reading a biography of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. We're reading this for our book club, and it's one that I recommended because there's a movie that's coming out about Bonhoeffer. And if you don't know, Dietrich Bonhoeffer was a German pastor, theologian, who died at the hands of the Nazis in World War II. And so he's written a lot of stuff about community. He's written lots of stuff about following Jesus, right? The cost of discipleship. I remember reading that book when I was a brand new Christian, and it really impacted me. So I've had this long relationship with Dietrich Bonhoeffer, but I'd never read a biography of his life, that kind of from the very beginning to the end. And so in this book, one of the things it highlighted about Bonhoeffer's theology was that Christ always encounters us concretely, okay? Not just abstractly, but concretely in the Word of God, especially the preaching of the Word, in the ordinances, right? The Lord's Supper, when we remember Christ's death for us and in baptism, and, he says, in other believers. And this last part, like, I think there's profound truth to what he's saying, is that when we think about the love of God, it's easy to maybe think about the, you know, this abstract, you know, free-floating idea of the love of God, but it's how we experience it concretely in the death of Christ on our behalf. And we experience the love and the goodness and the faithfulness of God through other believers, through others. But that's how God has designed it. And I think that's amazing. For myself, I've experienced the goodness and faithfulness of God through others in so many ways when I think of this last year. I've experienced it in my family, especially Kathy. She has shown me love, goodness, and faithfulness in so many ways. For almost 40 years, she's put up with me for 40 years. 36 of those we were married. We're married. she is, and when I think of her, I think that she is the faithful glue that holds her family together. Like, God works through her and is probably the most prime example of me experiencing the faithfulness of God. My kids, they're awesomely weird. I love them. And if you want to just know how weird they are, just ask me about our Christmas tree this year. I see God's creativity in them constantly, as well as God's sense of humor. I'm thankful for my family. And so that's something where I've seen God's faithfulness and experienced it concretely in this last year. I've also experienced God's goodness and the faithfulness in the family of God, in the church community. I'm in my 12th year here at Greenfield, and that's almost as long as I was a professor at Taylor in NEBC. I'm right now, as of today, I'm 152 days short of that. So at some point, it's going to tip where I've been a pastor longer than a professor. And that just kind of blows my mind, I guess, right? That's just weird. And I've experienced the goodness and faithfulness of God in this community. I see regularly God's goodness and faithfulness in this community of faith. I see it when you love and care for one another. And one of the privileges of being a pastor is that we get to see a lot more than maybe other people, or hear a lot more about what's going on than what other people might hear. But I see it when you love and care for one another, like how you cared for Anne at Don's passing, which was last January, how you cared for Tina as we grieved Werner's passing, or even most recently, Dora at Garth's passing. You know, that these things, these bad things that happen in our community, and there's others, but we care for one another. We support one another. I see it when you care for your neighbors, when you care for the less fortunate. I see it when you care for the staff or the leadership. And you know, so thank you for the Christmas gift. On behalf of the staff, I just want to say thank you. I see it when you care for me in these weird ways. Okay, so when I got back from holidays this year, in my office was this massive 7-foot tall Packers mascot, Green Bay Packers. I'm a football fan. I like the Packers. And there's this big quarterback, you know, this big mascot in my office. And, you know, that's just kind of weird. It's cool. It's weird. But in my mind, it shows that you care for me, that you care, you know, about my weird interests or my, of course, you hear about it enough. But, you know, and I still don't know who bought it, who put it in my office. But that's just, and I can think, now that's just a fun example, but I can think of so many sincere, small, caring things that people in this community have done for me and my family. I'm thankful for the many ways that you faithfully serve and love one another. We have so many teams that serve in different ways. Some are more upfront, and some are very behind the scenes. Some happen within these four walls. A lot happens outside these four walls. And I want to affirm you that as you serve one another, as we serve one another, as we love one another, as we serve our neighbors and love our neighbors, that you are exhibiting the love and faithfulness of God. Again, I think one of the ways that God shows his faithfulness to us is through the concrete actions of others in our lives. When we think about this hope for the future, that it's the same there, that we recognize that it's what God has done in us, you know, through others, that can give us hope for the future as well, because we see and have experienced God's faithfulness. Soon Chan Ra, in his book on the faithfulness of God in Lamentations, he writes that these verses from Lamentations do not emphasize the human ability to turn around their own circumstances, but instead focus on the character of God to bring about change. Hope is dependent on what God is rather than what we can do for ourselves. And it's my prayer for us as we, you know, reflect on this past year, and as we look forward to this new year, that we'll, you know, Chris will talk more about next week, that we would continue to allow God to transform us more and more into the image of his son Jesus, so that we would love each other deeper and in more concrete, practical ways, and exhibit the goodness and faithfulness of God to one another. And then those outside our community would look at us and say, and this I'm echoing some a quote from Tertullian, an early church father, the third century. He said that, you know, of the Christian community, that of those who love one another because God has loved us, that he says, look at how they love one another. And that's my prayer for this year. Amen.